Hello, I'm Juliana Needham, and this is Dealcast, the weekly M&A podcast from Merger Market. In this episode, we're heading to Australia. New research shows that deal leaks there are on the rise. So what are regulators going to do about it? To find out, I'm joined by Simon Segal, who is the director for Merger Market Australia. Hi, Simon. Thanks for joining me.
Hi, Julianne.
So can you start by outlining what the latest research shows about deal leaks in Australia?
The most authoritative data on deal leaks comes from the M&A Research Centre at the Bayes Business School in London. Their data for 2023, in the case of Australia, shows that Australia's leaks in terms of the total deals, leaks per total deal was 8.2%, which was the fifth largest out of 10 countries surveyed. And that is quite a rapid increase. Australia used to be the cleanest. It used to be ranked number 10. And for instance, in 2021, it only had a 6.3% leak ratio. So the situation in Australia is both there are more leaks and it's deteriorating in a global context. It's still in a mid-range, so it's not a big problem, but it is deteriorating.
And what's caused that deterioration?
Well, it's difficult to know. I think it's probably secular that there might have been doubts in ASIC monitoring it. The deal volumes became more competitive, and another reason might be that in other jurisdictions they were more robust monitoring of these deal leaks.
And could you outline the reasons for deals to be leaked?
The first would be strategic reasons, where deal parties leak information in order to get an edge. It's either in a tender process, or it's either to put off rival bidders. There are a whole host of motives why it would be strategic to leak a deal, and that is the most common type of leak. Some leaks are accidental, purely accidents, and that's not that common. Other leaks we could define as speculative, which is not really a place leak. And that's not really informed information. It's more speculation, tidbits broken up. So it's not necessarily accurate. A strategic leak, by contrast, or an accidental leak would be accurate. I think the one thing I do want to point out is it's in my experience, it's seldom due to investigative journalism. So it's normally strategic or speculation, but not due to investigations, but just due to market natter. And obviously you've got to distinguish then between those type of leaks, and then there's a leak which is simply breaking news from asking questions. So, I mean, that is a type of a leak. The veracity of a leak obviously varies, but that could be a variation of a leak, just simply the breaking news. But the most common would be strategic leaks from deal parties,
We'll come on to a bit more about the journalist's role in a moment. But are deal leaks always bad for deals?
Well, that's the interesting question. I was on a panel at a Merger Market M&A forum in Sydney 2 weeks ago, and the panelists were comms experts and investor relations people in Sydney, and I was the only one who suggested. You actually even questioned that. They were all unanimous that deals, inference negotiations, stock prices, public perceptions, and they're very destructive for deals. It could be argued that it works both ways. That I'm not advocating that deal leaks are necessarily positive, but on the other hand, they can improve understanding of the situation through enhancing transparency. They foster a decision making that's more informed. They stimulate public debate, and markets just act better through such better information. So there is an argument that could be made, that deal leaks aren't always bad. Now, Mark, the research institute that I referred to earlier, they found no evidence to suggest deal leaks make a difference to deal outcomes. There's no evidence at all. In other words, so deals that have leaked are just as likely to lapse or complete as deals that have not leaked.
And you're a journalist. Could you talk about what a journalist's motives are for publishing deal leaks? You say it's rarely the result of brilliant investigative journalism. It's normally a tip-off. So is it just a journalist kind of either doing something in the public interest or feeding the market's appetite for sensational news?
The various motives for journalists, it's highly competitive. So it's a race for clicks and readership and scoops. It's a drive for that. Journalists are, you know, they also get a lot of power and influence through being known leakers or well-credentialed leakers. It helps them cultivate relationships with sources. Quite frankly, it's often the case that one receives leaks, doesn't use them as part of a relationship building process. So you withhold leaks, you withhold information as part of the process to, develop trust with contacts. You develop trust in that way. You develop trust and credibility. And then for journalists, obviously the big issue. It sounds quite quaint, but it's whether the journalists are acting in the public interest or they just feed. Or they're just feeding this market's appetite for sensational news. So journalists have to balance that. And they, in order to do that, there's a huge amount of intuition that's needed to judge the credibility and the ethics of a leak. So you can't just receive information and publish it and run with it. Different journalists do it different ways, different columns do it in different ways, and different publications have different approaches to it. But the bottom line is that you leak often enough, you're wrong enough, and you won't be read. You won't have those clicks and readership. So the onus is obviously to be as accurate as possible. And try to be in the public interest. You know, are you just doing it to scoop and harming things? Or that's more of a debate about the nature of journalism.
Thank you. And so deal leaks are attracting a bit more scrutiny by the Australian regulators. There's been an increase, as you said. So you have the Australian Securities and Investment Commission and then the Australian Takeover Panel. Can you talk through their change in approach and what they potentially will do about the increase in deal leaks?
At the main, it's attracted huge publicity. The ASIC, which is the Australian corporate regulator, has publicly voiced concerns about deal leaks, which is not, they don't just mouth off because they, think it's, there's nothing else to say. It is a bit of a strategy. So the question there is, what does that mean and what they're about to do? They have made it clear that they are going to monitor leaks more closely, and they are looking to other jurisdictions to enhance security, to enhance their scrutiny of it. They also say that they're not actively considering changing existing settings. So they're not going to, it's not going to be dramatic or legislative at this stage. But I think the markets has probably got the message, the Australian market, that ASIC is serious about making an example of a significant leak soon. One could expect they will pursue one vigorously and maybe make an example out of that as opposed to asking, for major structural or legislative changes. So leakers are probably, because of these public soundings, leakers are probably holding back and lying low for a while. And it will go again next year. It could be a bit cyclical, a bit of a game. Ironically, ASIC's market cleanliness report finds that Australian markets remain quote unquote consistently among the global the cleanest in the world. So there you are, and that's their reports from July.
And could you just outline what potential sanctions the regulators have to impose on any parties that are leaking information about deals? Because it's often difficult to get to the source of it.
They have got powers to fine and to pursue it and to. It's fines. Well, I suppose I don't know the technicalities of the law, but under certain instances, people might actually, face criminal face jail sentences, but I'm not clear about that. But they've certainly got the law and the power to pursue it and to make and to ask questions and to summon information and gather evidence.
And one final question for you. Here in the UK, we have the takeover panel with the put up or shut up deadline. If there is information that emerges, then the interested party has to make a bid or say that it's going to walk away, then it can't make a bid for, I think it's 6 months. Is that rule likely to be introduced in Australia?
No. It's been debated. It's been debated endlessly, and it has been aired once ASIC came out with these comments. I mean, ASIC's not talking about going that route at all. There's very little appetite. It is aired regularly in Australia. The takeovers panel in Australia has very different function. It's more market participants themselves who are the panelists and they oversee things. Now, interestingly, the takeovers panel last year was conducting an investigation into a transaction happens to be from Nitro, from the private equity KKR in Potentia. And in doing that inquiry, the name of the panelists was actually leaked. So the takeovers panel actually got the participants, the deal participants, to sign a statutory declaration that it wasn't them. That's us. But obviously nothing happened about it. So, they were really highly irritated about that and did actually pursue it by asking people to sign statutory declarations that it wasn't them. And a statutory declaration is quite serious. It's not just, did you do it?
Okay. Simon, good to talk to you. Thanks very much. That was Simon Segal, Director at Merger Market Australia. Thanks for listening to this episode of Dealcast from Merger Market. I'm Juliana Needham. If you've enjoyed the podcast, please follow it and please rate and review the show. To find out more about what we've been talking about on this episode, please have a look at the show notes. Join us again next week.